Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for special needs individuals in our community. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with David Lipofsky from the AODA. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with the AODA.
Well, there's exciting news from the province of Nova Scotia. On Thursday, the 27th of April, the legislature in Nova Scotia passed a new accessibility law. They're now the third province in Canada to do so. Ontario was the first in 2005. Manitoba was the second in 2013, and now Nova Scotia has. And I haven't had time to get through the bill in its final form, but the initial bill was introduced last November, and it was very weak. And an ad hoc group of advocates with disabilities based in Nova Scotia pulled together really quickly, collaborated very effectively on coming forward with an agenda for reform. They opposed the original bill. And demanded a bunch of changes, worked with the government. I had the privilege on behalf of the AODA Alliance of providing them with some input when they asked for it, and they're quite happy with the results. I can't comment on the results, as I said, because I haven't reviewed it, but this is a major step forward. In Ontario, sadly, progress is still at the rate of molasses if you show molasses moving in slow motion. The Premier of Ontario, to her credit, Kathleen Wynne, had agreed last December 5th that she would that her government would create an education accessibility standard under the AODA. This is really important because we have more than a third of a million students with special education needs in our publicly funded schools, and even more, and if you add to that number, if you go to colleges and universities and preschool programs and so on, and they are all trying to learn in an education system that was largely designed as if they're not there. So we need an education accessibility standard to tear down the many barriers they face when they try to get access to education on a footing of equality. Well, the problem is that the Premier and her government have not taken the very next step they need to take to start getting that standard developed. They need to appoint an independent committee called a Standards Development Committee to come up with recommendations of what that access regulation for education should include. And even though it's been almost 5 months, as I'm speaking to you, since she made that announcement, they have not even posted the advertisement to invite people to apply to serve on that committee. So it's another third of a year lost with dithering. What we're worried about is that the public service may be trying to hogtie that Standards Development Committee before it even starts working. We're afraid that they're trying to come up with ways of limiting the range of accessibility barriers that the Standards Development Committee can even consider. And we've told the government in no uncertain terms they should not do that. Just get the committee going. Let them tell the government what the barriers are that need to be addressed. The legislation, the AODA, tells them what kinds of barriers they can consider. We don't need civil servants hogtying them before they even start. And we know that that's a risk because over 2 years ago, the province agreed to create a healthcare accessibility standard. They took over 2 years just to appoint a committee to start considering what it should include, and they tried to hogtie that committee. And so we know that that's a pattern and a worry. So those are the a couple of the main issues that we're working on now. There's more, but those are a couple of the big ones that are on the front burner right now.
So in terms of progress, has there been any significant leap forward that you'd like to share?
Well, it is a leap forward that they agree that the education system needs reform to become accessible. If we got to work on it, that would be really helpful. There has been a leap forward from our perspective in that we have been heightening public awareness of the fact that our standards for building new buildings are woefully inadequate. And if you are on Twitter and search on the hashtag #AODAFail, you'll see lots of examples of barriers in our community that could be fixed, that shouldn't exist. And we have a video of barriers at the brand new Centennial College Culinary Arts Center opened just last year that are illustrative of the fact that you can build a brand new building, meet all the existing accessibility rules, and still create accessibility blunders in the building. So there's steps forward in terms of what needs to be done, but we still have a provincial government that is extremely sluggish on what they should do. We wrote the minister responsible for the act, Tracy McCharles, back in the middle of March, over a month ago, just asking her to update us on what they're doing on a number of major issues. And we have, over a month later, not received an answer to that letter. So the best answer to your question would be once we get that letter and see what they say their plans are. The government's now heading into its last year of the current mandate. And usually in the last year of a government's mandate, they tend to get very taken up with preparing for an election, and we're trying to get them instead, in our case, to kickstart action that's been so sluggish on the accessibility front.
So in terms of real change and what needs to be done, what would you say to our leaders and to the community about making actual progress, if you could send any message?
It's a great question. Number one, they've got to start effectively and meaningfully enforcing the AODA. They've got significant enforcement powers. The enforcement of this legislation has been feeble to none. Early on, it was none, and when we opposed that and brought that out to the public, it went from none to feeble. And they've got to be very visible about it. They've got to let obligated organizations know, break the law, there are consequences. Because the government knows and has known for 4 years of rampant violations of this legislation, especially in the private sector. So that's number one. Number two, they have got to actively beef up the access standards that we've got on the books and work promptly to create the new ones to address the many barriers we need. The third thing we need is, in terms of the physical environment, the government has to recognize for the first time that its laws governing the built environment, whether it's new buildings or the retrofit of old buildings, are woefully inadequate, and they need to get fixed. And we need to get work on preparing the rules on how to do that. They have not done this, even though an independent review of the Disabilities Act recommended action on this over 3 years ago. So I should say over two and a half years ago would be more accurate. So those are a couple of, and the final thing that we would recommend is that the government needs to use other levers of power to effectively achieve accessibility. We have a Minister of Housing with directions from the minister on their priorities on housing strategy. for the province, nothing about creating new accessible housing. We have a Minister of Economic Development with detailed directions on what to do about the economic development of the province, nothing about incorporating accessibility into that. We have a minister responsible for digital government to come up with the government of the future in Ontario that you'll be able to interact with online. Nothing directed to that minister about ensuring that digital government will be a digitally accessible government for people with disabilities. So there's a number of other levers of power that are readily available to the government that are simply being ignored because there are no directions from the top.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you could stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
If people want to know more about this, I encourage them to follow us on Twitter at AODA Alliance and to retweet our tweets. That's at AODA Alliance. And if people want updates, send an email to the following email address and just say, sign me up. They write to AODAfeedback@gmail.com. AODAfeedback@gmail.com.
In this next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Dale King Lee, will be telling us a little bit about her struggles with finding the right accessibility services. Now, I'd like to thank audience member Raina Kozluk for making this interview possible. So tell me a little bit about your experiences trying to get services in the Windsor-Essex community.
In some ways, I've been fortunate. When Mark was small, I never ever took no for an answer, so I was able to get him in the 8-to-8 program with RCC. Later on, he went to school with RCC. I managed to get him into CPRI in London for 12 weeks for an assessment. Came back to RCC. He has since transitioned into a community school here in a Danes Room class. As he has gotten older and his needs have gotten more complex, he's dual diagnosed, multiple diagnoses, ADD, ADHD, ODD, sensory integration, disturbance of attachment, learning disability, intellectual disability. The services here can't really deal with him. So now we're at a crisis situation. As he's gotten older, it's been harder for him to manage his feelings and his emotions and deal with day-to-day situations, and sometimes becomes very violent, very out of control, and there is no one here to help.
So if you could see any service added within this area, something that would really help the situation, what would you like to see?
I would like to see a facility that can deal with kids of all different diagnoses. I would like to see something that doesn't end at 5 o'clock. Most kids, their disabilities don't end at 5, and if you become in a crisis situation, there is no one to turn to. You have the Windsor Police, who do their best, but are not trained in mental health. We also have Coast, but they only deal with youth 16 and older. And We have kids who are younger than that that get into a crisis. So who helps them?
So what sorts of coping strategies or treatment methods have proven most supportive?
We try to keep things as structured as we can. No surprises. We're just right now struggling with anything. It's just, I feel like I have lost how to parent. What worked when he was small does not work now that he's 14. I go through all my strategies of, you know, trying not to talk with too many words, try to be clear and concise, try to kind of remain detached, and that there's that emotional connection that is hard to not have when you're his grandma. You try to take space. Some days he won't give space. We're grasping at anything. We've tried charts, we've tried contracts, we've tried making deals, we've tried everything, and I can be grandma and try to do what I think is best, but I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychiatrist, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a teacher, I'm not a social worker, I'm not any of those things. And I, myself and other families out there just need to have, I think what we need is a team of people, so that when treatment begins, your child has a team behind them. They have the doctor, the pediatrician, the social worker, the psychologist, psychiatrist, the teacher, all of those things. They have that team that all work together for one common goal, to help strategize, to help figure out how to make it work at home. That follows him from youth to adult, and then when you transfer from youth to adult, another team that will take over and keep those things and consistency in place.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
It's summertime, and that means warm weather, drinks around the campfire, and nights out with friends. If you're having a few drinks, be sure to plan ahead. Designate a sober driver, call a friend, taxi, or just stay over. Get home safe this summer season, and thank you for always driving sober. A message from Arrive Alive, Drive Sober.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from David Lipofsky and Dale King Lee. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Stephanie Craig will be giving us a little bit of an update on the latest Turner syndrome happenings. Tell me a little bit about the latest Turner's happenings.
Well, we are preparing for our 37th annual Turner Syndrome Society of Canada conference, which is being held in Edmonton, Alberta this year from May 25th to May 27th. And we are very, very excited about the conference. It's being held within the Fantasyland Hotel that's in the West Edmonton Mall. And the theme of the conference this year is Welcome to the Wild West.
So what sort of response have you gotten from the community so far as you prepare for it?
We've gotten a very excited response from the community. There are a lot of very interesting seminars happening during the conference. One of the seminars from our keynote speaker, who is Brandy Gruninger, a psychologist, she's going to be discussing managing stress and anxiety. And we also have a variety of breakout sessions throughout Saturday and Sunday, which with sessions specific for parents of girls and teenagers diagnosed with Turner syndrome, adult women who have been diagnosed with Turner syndrome, as well as adolescent girls who have been diagnosed with Turner syndrome. We have breakout seminars in all those areas discussing different medical impacts of Turner syndrome, such as the impact of growth hormone, discussing genetics, and then more psychological and social sessions, including sessions on self-esteem, sessions on healthy living. So we have some very exciting sessions. On Saturday evening, we also have our banquet dinner with entertainment being provided by a band called Nice Horse. And we are very, very excited that the Friday evening, which is the opening of the conference, the high-level bridge, which spans the North Saskatchewan River in Edmonton, Alberta, is going to be lit up in honor of Turner syndrome. So we are very excited about that.
So, in your time doing these conferences, has there been any experience that's really stayed with you, something positive that's come from it?
Oh, definitely. There have been so many positive experiences from these conferences, and I think probably the one that sticks out to me the most is when I attended my very first conference, which would have been in 2007, so I was about 21 then, I think, and that was the first time that I had ever actually seen or met anyone else with Turner syndrome. And I remember it was a huge culture shock in a way for me, just getting to meet and interact with other people with the same diagnosis with me, and getting the chance to share experiences and realize how many of us had shared some of the same experiences, and at the same time, how many people were so different from each other in terms of their experiences and their interests and their personalities. So it was just really interesting to see that even though we were all brought together by this diagnosis, it didn't seem to really specifically define us in a way. You know, everyone still had their own other hobbies and personality aspects that they really felt to find them as well. So it's really great to see that there's just such a wide variety of life experiences that you can have even with having Turner syndrome, and that, you know, it doesn't have to be something that, you know, is a negative or brings you down in a way. There's really, you know, you can't let it stop you.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Oh, thank you very much. We're really looking forward to the conference, and I would just like to say thank you so much to Kayla, our planner from Edmonton, and the rest of the conference planning committee. We're really excited to get the chance to experience the event that they've been planning for so long.
My friends, the question has just become, where's the balance? Service providers, they do their best. A lot of them do what they're instructed to do. Some even go above and beyond. But those services aren't available during difficult ages. If somebody doesn't fit exactly within the puzzle that we as a society think they should fit into, finding the right balance, the right opportunity, can be very difficult. Now, what we've heard from David and from Dale today is that people are really pushing for more opportunities, more services, more advantages. And that's how it should be. But it shouldn't be an afterthought. It should simply come because people recognize the value in their fellow human beings. These are people. They're our children, our parents, brothers, sisters, people we see in the community. And how can we allow ourselves to overlook anyone simply because we don't fully understand a thing? I mean, there's the school of thought that says you have compassion for somebody who's wounded, loses the use of their legs. But for someone who has a mental health problem, for example, sometimes people are just a little more reluctant. And I personally don't understand that. It's a difference, just as any other difference. Just learn to look beyond the superficial and the obvious. But the fact is, we're never going to change the world with a blunt instrument like a club. It's about reason. It's about education. And that's what our good friend Steph was talking about, putting together something to bring people together in an accessible and even entertaining way. That's how you open doors, my friends. That's how you start to build a base of understanding. Find something two people, regardless of condition, regardless of background, can actually relate to. Maybe through spending some time together, you grow a little. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, and the numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love your stories, folks. Thanks again to that audience member who referred today's guest. History's full of great examples of the best ways to burn down those walls. And it's not through force. It's not through angriness. It's not about taking more than any other human being has. History has shown us time and again that if you put two people together in an accessible situation, and it's something they can both appreciate and both enjoy, common ground is there. You start to learn, enjoy, and experience. One thing I've always said is about artists with disabilities. The question isn't, did an artist with a disability create this? The question is, can it be appreciated by all? Because it doesn't really matter about the creation of it. It matters about the impact. And not everything a person with a disability does is meant to be going out of their way and inspiring. But if it has that effect, if a person can go to the Turner's Conference, enjoy the entertainment, and learn something from it, for example, then they're so much the better for it, because they're spending time in a relatable atmosphere, and they are growing by it. They might not even realize in what ways. Now, I think our political leaders and those trying to make a difference would be in a far better position to understand about disabilities. They spend some time actually among those affected, not seeing them as some cold statistic on paper somewhere saying, this number of people have mental health services. Fine, we'll write a check, make it go away. It's not how it works. You sit down with them, you ask for their story. You build a relationship. I think political leaders sometimes have this sense of detachment, not really knowing the people they're meant to serve. But, fact is, they are here to serve us all, whether we have a disability or not. But to be fair, they have a lot of pressure on them, coordinating for as many groups and figures as they can. And it's not always easy. But I maintain there's enough balance to be had. We can create a solution that works for everyone if we just listen to each other. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.